Since 1915, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce has been a valued resource, providing insight and strength to our city's business owners, workers, and customers. This month on KSKA, you'll have a front row seat at the Denina Civic and Convention Center, where the Anchorage Chamber will host a variety of speakers at their Make It Monday forum. In the weeks ahead, you'll hear about the real estate outlook in Anchorage, the dollars and cents of sport fishing in Alaska, and the impact of congressional action on Alaska's economy with U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. This week, U.S. Senator Mark Begich spoke to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on health care reform in Alaska. With more than 100,000 Alaskans living without health insurance, Begich outlined his proposed health care agenda and shared his thoughts on whether health care reform should include a public health insurance option. Coming up, U.S. Senator Mark Begich's address to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum on KSKA. First, this news. You are listening to KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. As members of Congress begin the August recess, intense negotiations for a passable health care reform bill have been temporarily set aside. Like most congressional leaders, U.S. Senator Mark Begich returned home this week to meet with the people he represents in the nation's capital. With cost, fairness, and the quality of care in question, Alaskans want to know what the future holds for health care reform. Recorded on Monday, August 10th, Begich spoke on health care reform in Alaska and responded to questions from the audience at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum. Here is U.S. Senator Mark Begich.
Thank you very much, Tony, and thank you for allowing me to say a few remarks. Barbara, I have to say something to you that I now figured out why they got you on the podium with me today, and that is because you like to stick people with needles, I think you heard. And I noticed, that if you notice, usually the chamber table usually has like six or seven of us really tight next to each other. I have this huge gap between me and Barbara. I think that's a good thing for you and me. But again, congratulations on your business and wish you great success. Tony, I don't know what the deal was. You told me you're not becoming president. Is it next meeting? Next meeting, but Phil got him here today. I don't know. Maybe it's a quiet meeting, just a small little issue to talk about. And he said, "You take it. I'm leaving." I don't know what the deal was there. When you said keep the decorum, he was referring to me. So everyone make sure that's clear. But thank you very much for this opportunity. And it's truly an honor to be here at the chamber again to give you a couple updates. But also, it is a pleasure to be home where it is not as hot and humid. When I left Washington, D.C., it was 90 degrees and humidity about 90%. It is a good way to get work done quick because people want to get out of town. So I'm glad to be here. I'm glad I could bring the beautiful sunshine today. There's a lot of visitors coming here over the next month. We're going to have several cabinet secretaries and delegation of fellow senators coming through Alaska over the next 30 days. Tomorrow I meet with Secretary of HUD and take him on a tour of Anchorage and talk to him about Alaska issues, and then we'll have several up in Bethel. Also, I appreciate this invitation to talk to you about health care reform and health insurance reform and what we're doing. We're going to have a power presentation here in just a minute to give you a sense of some of the issues we're facing, some of the challenges with the legislation, but also the risk that we have out there if we do nothing. But before we do that, I wanted to give you just a couple updates on two issues. The first is climate change, which finally has risen to a high priority in Congress and the administration. To make sure Washington does this right, I've introduced seven pieces of legislation this last week to address the problems in the Arctic, almost all of them caused or worsened by climate change. A week ago, I described the bills of Alaska's unique circumstances in my first speech on the Senate floor. And I know that's difficult for you to be thinking that and probably surprised that it took me 6.5 months to finally say something on the floor of the Senate. But it's true. I patiently waited because I wanted to have a good presentation on something that I think is critical about Alaska. But also I spent many hours presiding over the Senate and receiving the Golden Gavel Award of the time, over 100 hours presiding, but it gave me a sense of the issues that the Senate wants to deal with, but also how the process works to make sure that when we bring issues forward that we truly are part of the equation. The climate bills address oil and gas development, Arctic shipping, the need for more Arctic science, reducing health disparities in the northern regions, and better coordination of Arctic policy. Climate change truly poses challenges on the diplomatic, scientific, and national security fronts, and we must make the needed investments to ensure U.S. maintains its leadership at the top of our globe. And we must listen to and address the needs of residents of the Arctic. And I truly welcome the Chamber's review of this legislation and your comments and input on this, what I consider critical issues. Another issue which I know everyone in this room is concerned about, and that's Alaska's economy and the nation's economy. I was pleased, but not surprised, to see the latest Anchorage Economic Development Corporation report predicting that Anchorage will be holding its own next year before beginning a new era of growth. Rather than declining dramatically as elsewhere, total jobs and overall building permit values in Anchorage are projected to remain essentially steady through the next year before growing again. Despite some job losses in air cargo and tourism business, we're holding up a lot better than many places across this country that are fighting their way out of the recession. There are encouraging signs on the national level with regard to the recession. With housing starts up in June, existing home sales up now 3 months in a row, unemployment slight adjustment down, but still potentially going up, but still an adjustment down, not predicted. The GDP being cut in half in the sense of its loss over the last period. There's evidence that the Recovery Act is truly starting to move and work within this economy. And there are these mixed signals that 6 months ago I would have a whole different attitude because no signal was a positive signal. The Recovery Act that we passed, which I was proud to vote for, Alaska seems to be getting its fair share. For Alaska, it means big projects. New Arctic Research Vessel, the long overdue hospital replacement in Nome, and many other projects on military roads and other communities throughout Alaska, as well as in this community with additional police officers to the tune of over $2 million. The recovery bill will put $1.4 billion on the ground in Alaska and create or save 8,000 jobs. Just down the street, Alaska legislature is taking action a few blocks from here, so we get our fair share of the energy funds to make homes more energy efficient. I know it's going to take more time to move our economy and hard work, but there's clearly signs that the economy is stabilizing, even though we still have some rough road ahead of us. All which leads me back to the subject of the day, health reform, insurance reform. There are wheelbarrows of reports available to Congress and just as many opinions on this issue. As I sat here, and I appreciate all the folks that have brought me, it's truly Alaskan, I love it. They bring me their packets of information and making sure that I know everything about healthcare as well as letters, but there are an enormous amount of interest and issues around healthcare. I want to give you a little bit of my takeaway from the debate so far. It truly is a broken healthcare system that leads to lost jobs, reduced productivity, and less investment in capital, and ultimately stalled business growth. That's why I believe one of the best ways Congress can support and strengthen and grow America's business is rebuild the economy is to pass meaningful health reform. We've broken the presentation down into four sections. Why the status quo is not acceptable or sustainable, especially for the business community. How reform will help the average American. My priorities for health reform as the bills move forward, and the myths versus reality. And there's a lot of information out there that is just flat out wrong. Healthcare spending is truly out of control in this country, with a growing portion of our economy devoted solely to healthcare as measured by the GDP. In 2009, healthcare expenditures are approximately 18% of GDP. Without major reforms, healthcare share of GDP will rise to 34% within 30 years. That's one-third of our economy going just to healthcare. I don't need to tell you as business people or heads of households that an ever-growing percentage of your business expenses and your own paycheck is going to healthcare. The cost of premiums. This affects all of us. In just 10 years, family insurance premiums have doubled in Alaska. The average employer-provided premium was about $6,000 in 1997. In 2006, the most recent year we have on the state data, the same coverage averaged over $12,000. Of course, wages didn't come close to keeping pace. And you can see where we're headed if we don't act. What about the impact on business? It's even more dramatic. The next several slides come from the Small Business Majority, a group that I'm working with in Washington, D.C. I helped them unveil a plan, a report, in June that makes a very compelling case for reform. It was done by a respected health economist from MIT. His definition of small business is a business that employs 100 or fewer employees. In other words, a vast majority of Alaskan businesses. This slide shows that without reform, small business in America will spend more than $2 trillion on health benefits for their workers over the next 10 years. The impact on jobs is just as dramatic. With no reform, an estimated 178,000 small business workers will lose their jobs over the next decade because of dollars diverted to health care. The Small Business Majority is not pushing for a specific bill or plan. They took major elements of the variety of plans that we have and proposals by groups as well as Congress and put them into three categories: limited reform, expanded reform, or significant reform. So what happens with reform if it passes? Look at the red line on slide 7. I hope that's correct. Yes, I had to look at the number there. It says that even with the middle of the road reform, they just took the middle case, small businesses will save over $800 billion over the next 10 years. Money that won't have to be spent on health care. Considering that small business will drive economic recovery in America, it's huge. About $800 billion saved and available for investing in infrastructure, innovation, for increasing productivity and providing stable jobs. Let's turn next to impact of health reform on individuals and families. What's in it for the average person? Approximately 46 million Americans are uninsured. In Alaska, about 116,000 don't have health care coverage today, 18% of our population. Those statistics are amazing to me by themselves. Matter of fact, an additional statistic, by the time I'm on break here for the next 4 weeks, when I get back, another almost 700 Alaskans will lose their health care coverage. Thousands of Alaskans report avoiding the doctor because of high costs. When this basic care is delayed, it usually becomes more expensive later. People end up getting sicker and going to clinics or their emergency room for their primary care. Hospitals do not turn people away, and they don't just absorb the cost of the uncompensated care. It is passed to the rest of us in the form of higher medical charges, which in turn lead to higher premiums for those who are covered. As you can see here, nationally, the average family pays a hidden tax of around $1,100. But here in Alaska, for the uninsured, we pay about $1,900 per family. Out-of-control health care costs are having a dramatic effect on Americans across not only this nation, but also here in Alaska. Nationally, 62% of bankruptcies and 50% of home foreclosures are a result of unaffordable medical bills. And of those 62% that go to bankruptcy, 75% have health insurance. So it has a huge impact with or without. Those ones that had health insurance are the underinsured. The question keeps coming up. What is in this for the average person? The answer is clearly in one word: stability. Besides the family savings I just outlined, reform will bring stability in many ways. And these are the basic standards for any healthcare reform and insurance reform within Congress. No more coverage denied because of pre-existing conditions. You get to keep the doctor and your current insurance plan if you like them. You keep them. No more reason to make job decisions based on fear of losing health insurance. No more lifetime caps on how much insurance companies will pay. And you and your doctor make the health decisions, not the insurance companies. And don't let anyone tell you health reform won't benefit every single one of us. There are so many personal stories. Today I had several people come to my office and tell me some stories and send me letters. An acquaintance from Anchorage stood up in my town hall meeting that I held in June and said his life was changed forever when he was diagnosed with cancer. He's fighting back, but he can't quit his job or find one that's less stressful because he'll lose his current employer-provided coverage. And he won't be able to get new insurance because of his pre-existing condition. Or the heartbreaking column in the paper 2 weeks ago from a business owner in Palmer who described two friends hit by colon cancer. One sister had good insurance, got early screening, and is in recovery. The other sister was self-employed and couldn't afford insurance or coverage of any kind. She did not get early screening, and the cancer was not caught in time. After months of expense and uncompensated chemotherapy, she died. I hope you're beginning to see why I'm working for a solution on healthcare, trying to do something before the year is out. It's going to be tough. It means rolling up our sleeves and making sure that everything is looked at from every corner. As I work with my Senate colleagues, there are several Alaska priorities I'm pushing for in Washington when it comes to healthcare. Besides the general ones I've just laid out, there's some very Alaskan-oriented ones. A broad one, obviously, which affects this group, but also businesses across this country, is keeping small businesses healthy. Expanding our workforce. Of course, we'll need more doctors, but there must be an expanded role for physician assistants, advanced nurse practitioners, dental health aides, and other professionals that make a difference in our healthcare delivery system. Strengthening Native health care and reducing alarming health disparities in Alaska. And improving health care for our vets. We count on our servicemen and women to be there for us in times of need. And after their services is over and they have their own needs, we have an obligation to care for them. With 11% of our state population veterans, to me, it is clearly an Alaskan priority. And promoting good health, bending the cost curve, and cutting medical expenses must improve through prevention and involve prevention. 80% of the Medicaid spending in Alaska goes to patients with chronic conditions. More than $800 million a year at last count. The vast majority of the chronic conditions are caused by choices involving diet, exercise, tobacco. We clearly have to have a better handle on how to deal with that and create more personal responsibility. Let me inject a dose of reality. What is becoming an exaggerated, misleading debate over healthcare reform. Sure, there are skeptics. I'm a skeptic. I'm spending my time looking at every element to make sure we do it for the right reasons, not just because we want to pass something called healthcare reform. I have questions every day. I put my staff to work, even though I don't sit on the committees of dealing with finance and health. We have staff that works aggressively to try to input and give input on issues that I'm concerned about. But now the media are talking about the swift boating of health reform over the recess. Based on the nature of some of the ads and subsequent calls to my office, I believe there are some truths to that. Let me dispel a couple common myths. First, health reform will not lead to anyone's grandmother going in front of a death panel. I know there's some laughs out there, but the claim has been repeated. People think, you know, my mother, 70 years old, be walking up to a panel and a decision will be made on her health. That's just factually incorrect. It's just not true. Here's the reality. Under the reform bill so far, Medicare will encourage and pay for consultation with your doctors over living wills, organ donation, to do restoration orders, and other end-of-life decisions. It's a chance to talk with your doctor about your wishes. It's not exactly radical. In fact, Alaska already has a model law on the books concerning living wills. It passed 5 years ago with only one no vote. The difference is Medicare will have to pay for this instead of you out on your own paying out of your pocket for this advice. But you make the decision. Here's another scare tactic cooked up by opponents of health reform. It will mandate government-funded abortions. There's a TV ad on one right now, and it actually targets me. I was with UPS workers today, and the question came up. It is flat-out blatant lie. For a generation, the Hyde Amendment has prevented federal dollars from paying for abortion services. And health reform does not change that and does not change the Hyde Amendment. There is no expansion of this issue. But it's amazing because when you watch the ad, it's very compelling. You know, seniors looking, choice of health care, not covered, but geez, government's going to do this on abortions. It's just fact. It's just a blatant lie. But what they're doing is it's just like TV media. You try to take 30 seconds and grab at the emotions when facts are irrelevant. And that's what you see in that ad. Here's another myth. Democrats are ramming this through and don't really care about reaching across the aisle. Again, not true. I belong to the 2008 class of senators. High percentage of them are moderate Democrats. We have met with Senator Baucus, who's the finance chair, and have continued to pressure him to get some reform, but at the same time, bring as many Republicans across the line as you can, because it's important. This is an American issue. This is not a Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, or whatever other party you belong to. It is about solving this problem for the benefit of Americans today and into the future. And he is working. Matter of fact, I can tell you in caucuses, he gets beat up all the time by folks from Democrats saying you're not doing enough with the Democrats. He's spending more time with Republicans. But a lot of us in the 2008 class have a different view. We're here to solve this problem. We're not here to get into the partisan bickering or the media things that you see on there, but try to resolve this issue. Matter of fact, in the Senate Help Bill, which is a health, education, labor, and pension bill, Republicans' voices were heard. Of over 350-plus amendments, 161 of them were Republicans. They didn't vote for the bill at the end, but they had a lot of amendments. Matter of fact, I'm happy to say Senator Murkowski had an amendment ensuring that Native American tribes are eligible for various health workforce programs. She addressed the workforce shortages and will make funding available to Alaska health providers. Another one of her fixes allows insurers to charge tobacco users more because smokers have a higher medical bills, costs that the rest of us shouldn't have to bear. To me, these are not technical changes. These are substantive changes. Almost half of the amendments in that bill came from Republicans. That's the fact. Another, more facts versus fiction. Health insurance reform will not reduce choices. In fact, more Americans have access to greater choices in doctors and plans by taking away the insurance industry's ability to deny coverage. Another myth is that health reform means bureaucrats will ration health care. Truth is, it will expand access and improve the quality of care, not ration it. Doctors, nurses, and patients will make medical decisions, not the insurance companies. Finally, I want to mention Medicare. Despite what you hear, most people who have Medicare like it and count on it. Yes, we have problems in Alaska and other parts of the country with access and assuring that we have more doctors available and nurse practitioners and other professionals. But the majority of the people who have Medicare love it. It makes a difference in their life. We're still waiting for the details from the Senate Finance Committee, but the House bill makes significant changes, including eliminating the planned 21% cut in doctor fees, making sure, again, doctors get reimbursed for the fees they charge in Medicare, putting payment rates on a sustainable path, and expanding programs that reward physicians for better coordination of patient care. It eventually will eliminate what they call the donut hole in the prescription drug plan, where seniors will no longer be stuck paying expensive bills when their yearly coverage runs out. You know, I've covered a lot in the healthcare, and it's a constant moving target. And what I mean by that is, today when I was with those employees, they asked me, are you going to support that bill? And I have to remind them, for example, on the House side, there are three bills. There's no single bill yet. There are three bills that have not made it to the floor. There are, on the Senate side, there is the Health, Education, Labor, Pension Committee that has finished their bill. There's the Finance Committee that has not finished their bill yet, but it's moving through. We hope to see something in September. When that all ends up, the Senate will try to combine those into one bill. The House will combine theirs, hopefully, into one bill. And then we'll have even more significant debate. And then it will hit the floor of the Senate. We will debate it. There will be an enormous amount of amendments to debate this issue. Same thing on the House side. Then once those bills come forward, they'll end up in what they call a conference committee, and they will end up in more debate. So there is no single moving. This is one of the most significant pieces of legislation, touching 300 million people. We're not going to rush it. We're going to do it for the right reasons. We're going to ensure every voice is heard. We may not always agree, but we're going to try to make sure that we have a healthcare system that's affordable, sustainable, and has impact to the people who have insurance now in a positive way. You know, President Obama wanted this bill on the desk in mid-October, and it's probably unlikely that we'll meet that deadline because of all these reasons I just laid out. But I do think we are focused on bringing as many groups together. You know, I've met with a variety of folks around this issue. Business owners, union leaders, consumer groups, AARP, insurance executives, doctors, nurses, everyday people who receive the health care coverage and those that don't have health care coverage. We're trying to gather all that information so we can make the right decision at the end of the day. So as you go home tonight or as you walk out this today or when you walk out this door, push through all the media hype and the exaggeration on both sides and focus on what we're trying to do. There is no single answer yet, but I do believe, based on all the information being put on the table, we are moving in the right direction. We recognize the financial components of this. Many of us in the 08 class sent a letter to Senator Baucus reminding him that we need to make sure this is deficit neutral, that it's sustainable, but it also has impact to the people who currently have health care coverage today and making it better for them, as well as looking out for the next 46 million that are out there uninsured. This is probably, you know, in my 6 months now serving in the U.S. Senate, we've done a lot of stuff, I got to tell you. This one will have an impact not only for this generation, for many generations, and it takes thoughtful, rational debate. And that's what we're going to have, and that's what we're going to continue to have. Will it end up with something that I may like 100%? Probably not. Will it end up, I think, hitting these points of eliminating pre-existing conditions and out-of-pocket expenses and making sure prevention is paid for and making sure we don't have gender discrimination and those types of priorities? Absolutely. Because we are unified on that. That those are some of the points we have to make sure occur. Do I see it in my own life? I have a brother-in-law who's a small business person just down the street here. He pays about $460 a month in premiums, $15,000 deductible. He's basically waiting for a major incident to occur for him to have something taken care of. The end result is, when he needs preventive or minor incidences, he's not doing it. And sooner or later, we're all going to pay for that. So it is personal, but it is also important because it drives and has an impact to the economy. The small business community, it has an incredible negative impact that we have to resolve because the small business community of this country and in this state is the drivers of our economy. And if they are given a choice, affordable health care coverage, or not employing a person, those are choices we don't want because it will have a negative impact to this economy. So this is one issue, as I said, that's pretty important. It's exciting to have an opportunity to address the chamber, and I'll be happy to take some questions. But again, thank you very much for this opportunity.
You've been listening to U.S. Senator Mark Begich speaking on health care reform in Alaska, hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. This program was recorded at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center on Monday, August 10th. During the senator's speech, audience members submitted comments and questions. Incoming chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, Tony Izzo, selected the questions and posed them to Senator Begich.
Yeah, but I'm looking at Tony here, and I think every single one of you have asked a question. I don't know how he's going to do this, and I will just... Yeah, great, Tony. One thing we'll try to do, and my staff is now sweating bullets right now about what I'm about to say. We will address as many as we can, and then we will take these and we'll try to batch these and respond back to the chamber so the chamber can share them however they would like to. Is that okay, Tony? Notice I asked Tony that, not my staff. They're horrified right now that I... But this is, we will do that to make sure the chamber gets the responses as we batch them together if we don't get to all of them.
Yes. Yes, that would be terrific.
Thank you, Tony. I got your new car. Thank you very much for that. That's what I just asked you. No, just go ahead.
I think if I were to ask a question first, it would be about healthcare and speed reading. I have never seen a larger number of questions that were more articulate and to the point. I'm very impressed. Some of these are typed, and again, we'll be glad to pass them on.
You know, I believe in technology, and I know it has great power, but I wonder. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll try to condense these so we can get through as many as possible. First question here is, Senator...
yes, next question.
Haven't said anything about funding, and how will this program be funded?
You know, that is where it's stuck up in Senate finance right now. It's stuck in that because of the funding mechanisms. There are several debates of how to do it. A sizable amount of this is done through some of the savings. As I mentioned earlier, when you think of the national average, about $1,100 per premium is paid now for the uninsured. So part of that gets shifted out. The prevention is a critical piece of the equation. But there is a gap. We know the hospitals and the pharmaceutical companies have come to the table to the tune of almost $200+ billion of this cost. But there is a gap, and we have not resolved that. That's the great debate right now. I am one example that came forward, which I totally oppose, and that's taxing insurance premiums. That has been proposed by some, and I said I'm not for it. I think that's a big mistake on the long haul, but that is going to be our great challenge. But the goal is it must be deficit neutral when we're done.
Senator Begich, healthcare continues to see very strong jobs growth in Anchorage and Alaska. How do we protect this important part of our economy in the ongoing healthcare reform process?
Actually, in healthcare reform, and I can't remember the latest statistic, and I know Bill Popple will remind me once I step down from here, but I think it's 5 or 6 out of the top 10 employment categories are within healthcare related. He's nodding and said, yes, so I'm close, are healthcare related industries. What this bill will do, it also has workforce development, which is critical. As we know, when you start to move more people into preventive care and wellness type of programs, it means you have to have an allocation of workers in that arena. This bill focuses on ensuring that we have workforce development resources to ensure that nurses, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, doctors have access to resources, maybe in the sense of general practitioners and nurses and so forth, scholarships and other things to move folks into that arena and ensuring that we bring the folks online. Because right now, I can tell you there's a huge gap of demand for services and what we have available, especially in general practitioners when it comes to docs, nurse practitioners, as well as physician assistants. So it has a workforce development component in there, so we train, recruit, and put into employment in this growing field, because it is a growth field for us.
Great. There's always a question the few times I've done this that I hesitate to read out loud, but this one I thought was interesting. Is first a comment. Insurance companies have us by the moose. Well, it's a part here.
Okay.
Unless they have competition. And the question is, how can we call it healthcare reform without inclusion of a public option?
You know, if I can go to the first part of that question, if you debate this right now in the Senate, where the debate is, we want to make sure insurance companies do have that they're held accountable for their pricing structure. There's two pieces to this, to different pieces of legislation in the different forums right now in the House and on the Senate side, but there's two fundamental areas. One is an exchange. An exchange will show very publicly what the minimums will be, what each insurance company would offer. You would actually see that. It'd be transparent, so you have some choice. You can see the competition among each other. No offense to the insurance company folks that are here, but if you've ever tried to go out and get insurance yourself, it is a complicated process, trying to compare apples to apples, because it really is no comparison, because each one offers a little bit different. The goal of the exchange is to create some similarities as the baseline. They can offer more, but at least the base programs that would be offered, you can at least compare apples to apples. On the flip side, the debate right now is public option, co-op, some sort of format that is not funded with government dollars in the sense of its sustainability, like Medicare or Medicaid, but it's self-funded, like the co-op idea, like a credit union would be run. It's a very similar concept. Senator Schumer and several others are kicking that idea around. There will probably be some mechanism like that, is my bet, at the end of the day. And the goal is not to provide it at government cost at all. That's the goal, and I think that's achievable, clearly, by what we're planning to do, or what at least the discussions are. But you do have to create competition. It does create price structures and creates better pricing for the consumer. And right now, it's very complicated to figure out what plan is the best plan. The problem we have in Alaska, 95% of the market is controlled by two companies. That's a problem. The companies who are here, I apologize for saying that, but that's the fact. So we got to create more competition in order to have some more stabilization in the pricing. So the public option or the idea of a co-op or some mechanism will probably be in place at the final end to ensure that everyone's playing on the same playing field. But we're not there. We're a long ways away from that. Senator Baucus is working aggressively with the insurance companies, the small business community, the providers, ARP, and others to try to figure out what's the right mix to make that happen. And they may not, you know, my thinking is they'll get there, but I'm not sure. Senator Wyden has a bill that's separate. That's a whole nother way of approaching it. But the idea is to keep some accountability and create some competition in the insurance company industry.
Very good. We have a number of questions that address two specific areas. One is tort reform, and the other is the approximate 114 million Americans currently in health care plans, and will they be forced to give those up?
Let me answer the first one, then I'll go to tort reform, or the last part of that, and that is no. Simply, no matter what you read, what you see on TV in these ads, or how people hype it up on talk radio, the reality is, if you got an insurance plan now and you like it, you keep it. That's yours. You can do whatever you want. If you want to change, there'll be options. But what you have, you can keep. If you got a doctor you like, keep your doctor. None of these proposals, the four bills that are written today and the fifth one that's in draft form or in process, does not mandate or change that. In other words, it doesn't force you to go into something that you don't want to go into. With tort reform, there is a little discussion, but not much, and I'll be very frank with that. When you look at all the analysis and the funding analysis or the cost of health care, tort reform is about this, about as much as in between these two fingers here. It is that small of the equation, and it is not, from the political end, an interest among many members to take it up. And the second part is the value of it, the return in the savings that could be obtained is so small that it's not worth the battle.
We have a number of questions addressing or asking about a new program and how it would cover or if it would cover non-U.S. citizens.
And would non-U.S. citizens? No.
In addition,
for the United States.
Would proof of citizenship be required?
Oh, I know where they're going. Okay. It's illegal immigrants are not covered under any of this. Does that answer the question?
As it was written.
Yes. I know. I just restated because I think that's the question.
What about the amendment in H.R. 3200, which would allow Alaska and all states to do a state government plan or state government-run health plan?
That's on the House side. What they're referring to there, again, there's three bills on the House side. None have been formulated into a final bill, and no vote on the floor of the House or the Senate has occurred. So in one of the bills over there, the discussion is that these exchanges, these public option ideas also, would be state. Each state would have their own. They'll have their own ability to set them up as they see fit. And that's what that is referring to, I believe, is the question. That's one proposal. I'm a little nervous, to be very frank with you, if you set up 50 state exchanges and 50 state public options, it gets very complex. If you're a small business person in the lower 48 and you have three businesses that go over state lines, which is very possible if you own a franchise and you have three different locations, how do you manage that? It becomes even more complex for the small business person. I don't think, honestly, they have looked at it from that side of the equation.
We have time for one more. The question is, will federal, state, and local employees, including elected officials, be subject to the same program as the rest of us?
You know, I'd love answering this question because this is one of those mistruths out there. People think that we have some special plan being in the United States Senate. Let me tell you what our plan is. I'm with 4 million other federal workers. I pay 50% of my premium. I'm just like everyone else. Certain things are covered, certain things are not, and it's a market-driven insurance program. There's no public program. It is an insurance-driven, competitive program. But we get good rates, and why? Because we have a pool of 4 million people plus their dependents of 8 million people. For a single person, if I was single, it would cost me four, if I paid it all, no employer contribution, Just I decide I'm going to pay it all. It's $460 approximately per month. For a program that does not deny you on pre-existing premiums, has some prevention, it's not a bad program. It's not a great program, but it's not a bad program. For a family, it's right around $800, $900. I've always believed, and this is one of the pieces I'm talking to other senators about, I campaigned on this, my belief to simplify the whole thing is open up the federal program and let people buy into it. It's so simple, and it's done. We already have competition already within it. We're already getting a very good rate. But I pay 50% of my premium coverage. Last year, the premiums went up about 7%+. I pay that in this year's premium. So I'm like everyone else. I pay, and I pay a lot over the time. So that's one of those myths out there that I watch on TV, and I hear them that the Senate has this golden. I'm saying. I'm looking for it. Plus, when I turn 65, there's no, people think when we turn 65 as a senator, once you're retired or you're still in, if you're retired, you don't do Medicare. No. That's not how it works. I'm just like everyone else. If I get vested or I'm in Medicare, and when 65 hits, I get Medicare just like everyone else. There's no special program to put us aside. So there's a great desire to do whatever. I wish we had more prevention, actually, in our health care program within the federal government, because we don't do enough of wellness and prevention. But, again, that's the bigger the group, the more stabilized cost, and the lower the cost. That's the goal. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, all of you, for allowing me to answer those questions as fast as I could. And on your desk or on your table is some information. Please take it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to U.S. Senator Mark Begich speaking on health care reform in Alaska, recorded in Anchorage on Monday, August 10th. If you would like to download today's program, please visit our website, kska.org. Today's program, hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, is the first of four Make It Monday forums you'll hear on KSKA. Next Thursday, speakers from REMAX Properties and Wells Fargo Bank will provide a real estate outlook for Anchorage. On August 27th, you'll hear about the dollars and cents of sport fishing in Alaska. And on Thursday, September 3rd, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski will speak on the impact of congressional action on Alaska's economy. That's all coming up on KSKA Thursday afternoons at 2 p.m. This has been a presentation of KSKA's news and public media. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.